Translation and Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami Prabhupada. In a state known as Usinara, there was a celebrated king named Suyagna. When the king was killed in the battle by his enemies, his kinsmen sat down around the dead body and began to lament the death of their friend. There's no purpose, so we'll carry on to the next two, three verses. Verse 29 to 31. His golden bejeweled armor smashed, his ornaments and garlands fallen from their places. His hair scattered and his eyes lusterless. The slain king laid on the battlefield, his entire body smeared with blood, his heart pierced by the arrows of the enemies. When he died, he had wanted to show his prowess, and thus he had bitten his lips, and his teeth remained in that position. His beautiful lotus-like face was now black and covered with dust from the battlefield. His arms with his swords and other weapons were cut and broken. When the queens of the king of Usinara saw their husband lying in that position, they began crying, "O Lord, now you have been killed. We also have been killed." Repeating these words again and again, they fell down, pounding their breast at the feet of the dead king. Purport. As stated here, Rabhasa dasta dhaschanham, the dead king, while fighting in anger, beat his lips to show his prowess, but nonetheless, he was killed by the providence, Vidhina. This proves that we are controlled by the higher authorities. Our personal power or endeavor is not always supreme. We must therefore accept the position offered to us by the order of the supreme. So we're continuing the chapter of Hiranyakashipu, the king of demons. Here, Hiranyakashipu, as we mentioned in the previous verses, that he's speaking about the body and the soul are two different things. And one should not lament for the body is temporary, but the soul is eternal. Now here again, to pacify his relatives who were lamenting the death of Hiranyaksha, he's reciting a story from the previous histories where Yamaraj is having a discourse with the friends of a dead king. Srila Prabhupada explains that this incident of Hiranyakashipu and the killing of Hiranyaksha took many millions of years ago. And he's speaking about the philosophy of the body and the soul, and how different they are, and how the body is temporarily manifested due to certain circumstances. And then that same body, after the demise comes, the soul goes on its onward journey to the next birth. And in order to emphasize that this is nothing new, he's reciting a story which was again taking place further back into history. And the conversation between Yamaraj and the friends of the dead king is also on the same topic. And then 5,000 years ago, when Lord Krishna, when he spoke the Bhagavad Gita on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he gave the same knowledge to Arjuna. So again, in the same Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna is speaking, he is actually telling Arjuna that this knowledge which I am giving to you is nothing new. I gave the same very knowledge many millenniums before to the sun god. I am just repeating it again to you because this knowledge, due to influence of time, has been lost. So we can conclude from this understanding that this knowledge of the soul and the body is not a new one. It has been there since the time immemorial, from the beginning, very beginning. Because the very knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam comes from the Vedas. And the Veda actually came when Lord Brahma spoke those Vedas after his creation. So this knowledge is transcendental knowledge which is the same all throughout. It doesn't change. Whereas today we experience that when we are preaching, and those who are educated in the field of science, they would come up with many, many arguments, try to defeat our representation of the science of self-realization. They said that where is the scientific proof in this? We need scientific proof in order to authenticate some theory or some act. But we know from our fact that those who are students of science, that science is an ever-changing field. It is not something new. For example, just one simple conclusion we can draw is that when Newton, Sir Isaac Newton, when he was sitting there and he's observed an apple falling from the tree, that very action of apple falling towards the ground, he started thinking, why has an apple fallen on the ground and not flown up towards the sky? There must be some force. So then, the credit is given to him that Sir Isaac Newton is the discoverer of gravity. But the gravity was there long before even Isaac Newton observed it. Apples were falling from the trees long before even he saw it. Only thing was that people were not maybe intelligent enough, or maybe they were not interested in why apples are falling from the tree. Because it was not very, very important subject matter for their livelihood. Generally, we find that people are interested in subject matter which will fulfill their basic requirement. And Prabhupada says this very clearly, that the basic requirement is eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, which is universal across all species of life, not just the human life, but all species of life. So if you look at all species of life and analyze their activities, you will see that they are basically fulfilling the order of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. They don't see anything beyond that. But the human beings, they go a little further. They try to actually try and understand why we have to sleep, why we have to eat, why we have to mate, why we have to defend. So then they have all these universities that are trying to make research. Even today, the people are researching in sleep. And there are so many investigations and theories put forward of disorder of sleep, how much sleep is required, when to sleep, when not to sleep. So many different theories are coming up. The point I'm trying to make here is that these things, the observations are made, and then people try to justify why it's happening. But these things are happening all the time, anyway. But as a student of science many, many years ago, we were studying in physics. And the physics was based on mechanics. The force and anti-force and all this sort of stuff. It was based on mechanics and how the mechanical process worked. And now, the process of physics is based on, what is that new theory? Quantum theory. So they are going on quantums. Now they are thinking that this quantum theory is something so wonderful that it's going to explain the secret of life. And they're studying and trying to go deeper and deeper into the tiny minute atoms and thinking this quantum theory and quantum understanding is going to explain the existence of this living force. And they're trying to sort of spend millions and billions of dollars and experimenting trying to find that. Simply because they have made an observation that there's a difference between a dead body and a living body. So what is the difference between dead body and living body? They cannot understand that the soul is the cause of one's living. And they're trying to understand the soul through the material science. But recently, if you go and read many of these new scientific journals where modern scientists are going deeper and deeper into understanding the cause of one's existence and the consciousness. And they have actually come to a conclusion that they cannot explain the consciousness, where it's coming from. But they cannot openly come out and say that, because once they come and say openly that the cause of the consciousness is the soul, and the soul is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, which is spiritual in nature, then it will defeat their whole science. The whole so-called scientific foundation will collapse. So they are afraid to do it. But in private, many of these so-called highly recognized Nobel laureates are saying this. Because I worked for many years with my spiritual master, who was dealing with many Nobel laureates, and we had many times private conversations on the basis of trying to understand consciousness. And they actually come down to the point and they declare that actually there must be a God which we cannot understand. But the scientific world cannot accept God because it is not a physical entity. So they are trying to speculate. But this knowledge you can see here in the Bhagavatam, that the continuity of the same knowledge is there from year after year after yuga after yuga, millennium after millennium. It's the same knowledge. It's nothing different. So we have to have a clear understanding that what is our position, as we discussed in the previous days and in the previous classes, that the duty of the soul, once it comes to realization and an understanding that this material body is not the self, but there is something beyond the self, and that is the soul. And that soul, what is its duty to perform? Now, if we are influenced under the more the material nature and material consciousness, then we would think like animals. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending is our purpose in life. And then we pursue these goals, try and perfect our sleeping, try and perfect our eating, try and perfect our mating and defense. And we see they are spending millions and millions of pounds in trying to create an ideal situation that you can have perfect sleep. Or for mating, they are making many, many fanciful ideas and to enjoy the body. And then at the same time, for eating, and so eating good, nourishing food, which is mentioned again in the Bhagavad Gita, that for good sustenance of the body, one must eat food in mode of goodness. And if you eat in the foods in the mode of goodness, two things will come out of that. One, good health, and two, longevity of life. And longevity of life, again, is not that, you know, if you eat good food, you live for forever. Just like in this verse, in this purport, Prabhupada is explaining that there's a higher being at work who decides what happens. You know, we are not in control. So, but what Bhagavad Gita is saying, that if you eat more food in the mode of goodness, it will give you a good quality of life. We see today that people may be living longer with so much medical facilities, but the quality of life is terrible. You know, if some of you have visited the hospitals, and then, you know, hospitals are a good place for some sort of minor ailments. But then you see, you know, when you go to the hospital, you have the maternity ward where the new child is being born. Then you go to the pediatrics ward where the little children are taken care of for little ailments they have. Then you have general ward where, you know, other sort of minor ailments taken. But then you have the geriatric wards where the old are just lying there waiting for death because they have nothing to look forward to. Their bodies are completely deteriorated now. The only thing which is keeping them going maybe is the chemicals which are pumped in them. And sooner or later even that will not work. But the quality of life is so terrible. But if you look in the Bhagavatam, where it's describing the different planetary system, where what kind of lifestyle it is and how they're enjoying their lives, and not only that, but even on this planet, if you look back into history, even like so 400-500 years back, people were having a good healthy life, and you know they were living happily. And some of us may have experienced that our great grandmothers and fathers, they were living right up to the age of 80, 90, 100 without any health problems. But now we look at our fathers and mothers or their our grandparents, they're all suffering from heart problems, diabetes, many other complications of the body, so many forms of cancers, so many unlimited diseases are there. And this is because we are not following the instructions which are given to us, which helps us to have a better quality of life. So the scriptural understanding is very clear, and the duty of the soul, once it comes to that understanding, that what is his position, then he goes on his path towards self-realization. That is why Prabhupada emphasized the science of self-realization. And this bhakti yoga process, which is introduced by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is for that purpose, to come to that platform. That once you come to know that you are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, you have a particular body, how to utilize these particular facilities which are given to us and perfect our life in this very, very lifetime through the process of bhakti. And what does the process of bhakti entail? The process of bhakti entails that we serve the Supreme Lord in the mood of devotion. And there are certain standard forms of devotional service which are laid down by the experience of previous great saintly persons. Now, we don't have to make any experiments, but simply follow in the footsteps of the great saintly persons who have perfected their lives. And if we follow in the same path, then our perfection will be there. That is the goal of life. But unfortunately, what happens is just like the Prabhupada is mentioning this purport. The dead king, while fighting in anger, beat his lips to show his powers, but nonetheless, he was killed by providence. This proves that we are controlled by higher authority. Our personal power and endeavor is not always supreme. We must therefore accept the position offered to us by the order of the Supreme. So Prabhupada is very clearly explaining here that each one of us has been given a position which we can utilize for the service of the Lord. But we cannot concoct anything and think that we'll have perfection in life. Just like here under illusion, Hiranyakashipu, although a great learned person, is speaking great philosophy here to his kinsmen, but in his own practice, he's failing. Because he is trying to create a situation for himself where he will become immortal. He will become a controller. He wants to control everything. And he thinks that if he can kill the Supreme Lord Vishnu with his trident, then that will be his demise and he will become the most powerful person. So he's trying to do all these things under illusion. But at every step, he's miserably failing. He's not succeeding. Now in our own endeavors, we see that we are doing similar things to Hiranyakashipu. Maybe we are not endeavoring to conquer the three worlds, but at least we are trying to conquer the domain we are living in, or the little tiny universe which we have created for ourselves, thinking, I am the master of my universe. I am the controller of my destiny. And we are trying to do these things. Not just as devotees, even in the material world, people are trying under illusion to be in control of the situation. But as Prabhupada explains in this purport, that we are not in control of anything. But whatever we are, whatever position we are put in, is due to our previous actions and interactions. Whatever actions we have performed in the past, good or bad, that will decide what is happening to us now. So sometimes we have a wonderful situation where everything is easily in excess. Other times we have to endeavor so hard and still we fail to achieve our goals. And many times we feel that we are in a happy situation. And other times we feel in a very distressful and miserable condition. And then we try to figure out why these things are happening. And we blame this person or that person or this thing or that thing for the cause of our happiness and suffering. But this is all happening because of our own doing. So we simply have to accept that whatever is happening, it is happening by the divine providence, by the Lord's authority. He has decided what is good for you, what is not good for you. And under the circumstances, whatever comes our way, we have to accept that with grace and make the best of the situation. like the old saying goes, make a good use of a bad bargain. So sometimes if you think that we are in a bad situation, but we can still make a good use of that situation and come out of that difficult situation without any difficulty. But that can only happen when we have a proper understanding of Krishna consciousness. Without Krishna consciousness, we'll be bewildered. And we see all over the world, in the material world, everybody who is put in this kind of difficult situations, they're suffering and they're bewildered, they do not know what to do. And then one of the worst diseases which is known to mankind today is depression. And everybody falls into depression. And recently they did a survey of all different countries, you know, the so-called topmost opulent materialistically developed country, the U.S., to the most third world country, some obscure country in Africa, which is completely devoid of any material facilities. And they found all across that everyone is suffering from depression of some level. And this comes because we don't have a proper understanding. We think we are in control. So we're trying to control our situation, and we fell into this situation of depression. And this depression is such that it creates such an imbalance in your thinking that at some point you become so bewildered by that you cannot see what is right from wrong. And then very, very soon you become suicidal. And you think that if I seize my life now, that's it. They will kill off everything. It will seize all the suffering, everything. But the scripture doesn't condone that. It doesn't accept that. Because in the contrary, Prabhupada says that if you violently take your life through suicide, then you end up in a ghostly body, and that ghostly body is just floating around in a very miserable condition, and is trying to find another living entity, and tries to enter that body just to facilitate the principle of sense enjoyment, because that the potency of enjoyment is there even in the ghostly body. It doesn't mean it ceases when the body dies. You know, as is explained here, when this body dies, the soul moves on to an onward journey to a next birth. And the next birth, again, Krishna says, yam yam vapi smaram bhavam ante kalevaram, that whatever our thoughts and consciousness is at the time of death, that body will be achieved. Otherwise, we are in full consciousness of ourselves, you're placed in the right way, we have a proper understanding, and you're Krishna conscious at the point of departing from this body, then the destination Krishna says that you will certainly come to me. Which means that we are freed from this material bondage and we go to the spiritual world. And in the spiritual world, we have no problems. Because we are not concerned with the body anymore. Because everything, all the suffering and enjoyment is based on the body here. But when you get a spiritual body, then there is no fear of death, old age and disease. You are freed from that. So, Krishna consciousness is explaining to us how to come to that platform. And this depression is so bad that it attacks every one of us. And sometimes we may think that because we have come to Krishna consciousness and we have been given opportunity to have a higher understanding and we have access to higher knowledge and we are trying to execute the process of Krishna consciousness as Srila Prabhupada has taught us, we'll be freed from these diseases of depression. We find that even amongst devotees, there is depression. And that madness, because sometimes the depression also accumulates into madness. And this is there, why? Because we are thinking still that we are in control of our situation. And because now we are under the shelter of the Supreme Lord, everything is very rosy and very perfectly situated. But that situation only comes when we are fully surrender to the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, we will be suffering whatever good or bad deeds we have done. Krishna consciousness is explaining to us that one who is fully surrendered to the lotus feet of the Lord is freed from all material contamination, freed from all material desires. He is perfectly situated. And in any situation, he will not be bewildered because he sees everything in relation to the Supreme Lord. And when he sees everything in relation to the Supreme Lord, then he's not concerned, bothered. Just like we see saintly people described in the scriptures. We sometimes read biography of great saintly personalities who are staying in Vrindavan and executing Krishna conscious devotional service there. They're quite happily executing their Krishna consciousness. Now, when we read this kind of biography, we say, Vrindavan must be a wonderful place. So then some of us have good fortune to go to Vrindavan. We have all been to Vrindavan. But then once we go to Vrindavan, I think almost all of us get a shock that it is not as described in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Krishna is running around the Vrindavan forest, and there's wonderful luscious green grass everywhere for the cows to graze on, and the trees are all Chintamani trees bearing wonderful fruits, and the land is very, very, you know, fragrant, and the atmosphere is just first class and perfect, as perfection can be described. But when we go to Vrindavan, we don't see that. What we see is what is in our material thinking. We don't see Vrindavan. Whatever our material concepts are, whatever material understanding is, we see that Vrindavan. So we have to actually see Vrindavan with Vrindavan consciousness. Otherwise you will see open sewers, you will see lots of hogs running around, unlimited mosquitoes, foul smell everywhere, and haggling and beggling going on all over the place, even for a 5 paisa, which is like you know, less than half a penny, you know. If we are arguing with the rickshawwala just to get half a penny discount, you know. It's just ridiculous thinking of that thing. And we think this is Vrindavan. But then we see that, when we go during Kartik, the weather is first class, it's not so bad, it's not too hot, not too cold, just right. And many people are there, you know, and then most of, because the Vrindavan, you know, so many people go on with the mood of going to Vrindavan for Kartik. They have devotional ideas. It's not exactly your Bahamas that you're going for pure sense enjoyment. So people who go to Vrindavan during Kartik are spiritually minded people. They have some understanding of devotional understanding. So they go and perform, yagyas, chanting the holy names, reading the scriptures, associating with the devotees, having kirtans and all these things. That creates a wonderful atmosphere. But then just a couple of months later, when winter sets in, it's freezing cold. And then you think, I'm in Vrindavan, but you're thinking how to get out of Vrindavan. You don't understand in the freezing cold winter of Vrindavan, because it is you know, absolutely cold. You know, unless you're sitting in the four walls surrounded by first class heating system, you don't want to venture outside. Then comes the summer, scorching heat, 40, 45 degrees, 50 degrees, and temperature so soaring outside that you'll wither away, you know, within minutes, you know, if you don't take good precautions, and you'll get dehydrated. I think, Vrindavan, this is wonderful, you know. What I read in the Bhagavatam and what I see here is two different Vrindavans. But then you see the Goswamis, how they were living. In fact, if you read the Goswamis, they didn't have the MVT facilities. What they had was just a tree, and they spent the night under a tree. And they didn't have exactly your, you know, latest technologically, advanced jackets which would keep you nice and warm with the fleece and so many things. They just had a small piece of cloth to cover their body. So, but they were quite happily situated in Vrindavan, because their Vrindavan is different Vrindavan from your and my Vrindavan. Even to the extent that we don't go that far, we just go just in the recent past. Srila Prabhupada, very nicely situated in Radha Damodar temple. Still the winter was there, still the summer was still there. But Prabhupada, you don't see anywhere Prabhupada complaining about the hot and the cold, or the mosquitoes, or the foul smell, or all the terrible rickshawwalas, or the shopwalas. You don't see Prabhupada complaining about anything. Prabhupada is saying Vrindavan is just wonderful. Because Prabhupada's consciousness is Vrindavan consciousness. And your and my consciousness is not quite Vrindavan consciousness as yet. But if we pursue the process of Krishna consciousness with sincerity, then definitely that Vrindavan consciousness will develop. But then, when you develop that Vrindavan consciousness, you don't have to trek all the way from here some 5,000 miles to trek of land in North India, which is called Vrindavan Mathura. You can have Vrindavan here. Wherever you are, it is Vrindavan, because your consciousness is Vrindavan. You know. In fact, here, right here in this particular place, it is no different from Vrindavan. Because when Prabhupada first came to this place, he said, this is just like Vrindavan. And then he invited the lordships, Radha Gokulananda, here. And this is the domain of Radha Gokulananda. So Gokulananda, the Supreme Lord, is enjoying himself in Gokula. So this is Gokula. But do we see this place as Gokulananda? No, we see this as a small farm community in a small tract of land, which is known as England, and specifically Lechmore Heath. But we don't see this as Vrindavan. And we are all eagerly saying, you know, if someone comes and says, yeah, you know, Prabhu, do you want to go to India, Vrindavan? You know, I'll pay you all your expenses and everything. You will jump to the idea. Yes, I want to go to Vrindavan right now. But you're already in Vrindavan, and you want to go to Vrindavan, India. Because you still have that material understanding. So this Krishna consciousness is actually bringing us to the highest platform where we are freed from all this material contamination. But that only comes when we are actually focused in our practice of Krishna consciousness. And we learn to see everything in relation to the Supreme Lord. And whatever situation we are in, we have to think, why I am put in this situation? And then, what I can do now about this particular situation I'm in, how I can make it more Krishna conscious, how I can make it transcendental. Because every situation you may be, you can make it transcendental if you know how to do it. But with our own speculation, we will not know. So we have to take shelter of the scriptures and great saintly persons who are fixed in their consciousness and learn from them and take guidance from them, then a perfection comes without difficulty. That is why Prabhupada, if you read the purports, many times Prabhupada is saying that one must always try and understand the situation of Krishna consciousness with the association of devotees, and one must always take shelter of a pure devotee, and under his guidance, pursue your Krishna conscious activities. So, most of us, we come to Krishna consciousness and then we try to follow this. But then, after a while, we become complacent and we become neglectful of a spiritual path. We do not take seriously the shelter of the spiritual master. In the beginning, like I mentioned last Friday when I was giving class, that we are so eager to become initiated. But once you are initiated, then what? I've done now. I've been there, I've done that, I've completed. So I'm quite happily situated now. If I die now, then no problem. You know, I have a spiritual master who's going to take me back to Godhead. Well, it's not that easy. Prabhupada says, when you take shelter of the spiritual master, means you are giving your life to him. And in return, he will make sure that he guides you every step till that last moment that you enter in the spiritual world. And what does that mean? That you fully adhere to the instructions of the spiritual master. You take full association of the spiritual master. And take the benefit of his physical presence to guide you. One devotee, a group of devotees actually were visiting Srila Gaur Govind Maharaj. And out of eagerness, they were saying, oh, Gurudev, how is your health now? How are you? And he just laughed and saying, this is a material concept. you see me, I'm quite happily situated, I'm quite healthy, I'm not suffering from anything. So why are you asking a silly question? He said, when you meet a saintly person, you don't inquire about how you are, how is your health, how you're situated. You inquire about the subject matter of Krishna consciousness. That's why even in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying, Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasanna sevaya. Pariprasanna sevaya. So the service comes after you have met submissive inquiries. And what is that inquiry? That inquiry is not about something mundane, but the inquiry is that how I can get out of this material miserable condition. And the spiritual master then instructs you to follow his guidance to get out of the situation, what we are in. But how many of us really do that? We take it for granted. Of course, in the beginning when we are young devotees, we are eager to hear. But we think that now that I'm a little older devotee, more experienced in Krishna consciousness, I don't need to inquire. But then if we make an introspection of ourselves, we find we are in the same miserable condition as many of the other people who are suffering. The only time you are freed from this is when you are situated on a transcendental platform. But then we are situated on a transcendental platform, then you are so eager to share your Krishna consciousness with everyone and distribute. Just like Prabhupada. Prabhupada wasn't sitting in Vrindavan thinking, I am perfected in my life, you know, so I am quite happy in my bhajan here. I don't need to do anything. No, he was thinking, how I can give Krishna consciousness to the suffering people? How I can deliver them from this suffering? And he made great endeavors. He did not care for his personal comforts. He went out of his way to share Krishna consciousness. So if we are in the same situation as Srila Prabhupada, then why aren't we eagerly going out and forgetting our personal comforts or discomforts to share Krishna consciousness with others? That is because we are not on that level. So we have to learn from that we have to take full and complete shelter of the spiritual master and the devotees and make progress in Krishna consciousness. Every day we should be thinking, how much Krishna conscious advancement have I made today? And if we haven't, then we should be very, very worried, because time is running out. None of us is going to be here for next 10 million years. Any time, death can approach us. And are we ready? That is the question one must ask oneself. If death comes this very second, can we say, okay, no problem, I will embrace you and I will be on my way to the spiritual world? Parikshit Maharaj was ready. He was sitting there on the banks of Ganges inquiring for Sukadeva Goswami. And he knew that death is going to come in 7 days' time. He said, no problem. He was ready. Are we ready? That is the question. So every day we should think, how I can improve my Krishna consciousness. And when we improve our Krishna consciousness, we should be eager to share that with others. And when that sharing is there, and you want to give Krishna consciousness to others, you must consider that is one of the symptoms of advancement. So, it's almost end of class, 8:30. So we'll stop here. If anybody has any questions, comments, feel free for a few minutes.